But this is, yeah, this fits because the whole mood of the show is that we just slowly start talking to each other, and that's where everything comes in.
It's true.
Now we're just doing it with several dozen people watching us.
I'll vamp for a minute. If you're from New England, would you raise your hand? Okay, keep your hand raised if you drink iced coffee this time of year. The fuck?
Yeah. For audio listeners, folks, it was the entire room. All their hands stayed up.
An overwhelming amount of psychopaths. And I like cold weather, but cold coffee. What is it? Because it, huh? I'm with you on the caffeine. You've missed the part that I'm weird. It's the cold bit, the cold coffee bit. You can drink it faster? Okay. All right.
So we're just trying to get the drugs into our system as fast as possible.
The other thing, so this is my second time in New Hampshire. It's a beautiful state. I'm very, very glad to be back here. One of the things I find very funny about this state is people take pride in we leave people alone here. We do our own thing. We leave people alone. I've had 15 people come up to talk to me today to tell me about how New Hampshire leaves people alone. This is the gabbiest fucking state I've ever been in. It's very friendly. It's very gabby. There is a group illusion that you all have that you are somehow isolated cat people. That is not true.
Is that a reputation here that they're all hard bitten ice farmers
I believe that is the romantic image that the New Hampshireites have of themselves, is that they are all like in a rocking chair at home by themselves or something like that. They're not. I had a 45 minute conversation at my hotel with Pam, who turns out to not work at my hotel. She was just hanging out, just hanging out in a recliner waiting until people came in. We had a good long conversation about the incredible. I am here for old world bullshit. I am here for it. There is some real good old world bullshit in New England where we like Massachusetts in terms of sports, but we don't like them when they came up to look at our leaves. And we like, there's all this this weird org chart of we like Maine for this thing, but we don't like Maine and this other thing. It was very complex. I was very impressed.
The only thing I know about Maine is that I met a girl in my freshman year of college who was from Maine. And it was at that point I realized its reputation as the deep south of the far north was real. I mean, I'm just saying that after the first question of whether or not Jews really have horns, you start wondering what the fuck is going on up here. Is there a permanent damage to the frost?
Before we get started, this I just kind of want to get an idea for everybody's from. If you're visiting from Vermont, cheer. Thank you very much for being here. Great. If you're from Massachusetts, cheer.
There was one attendant boo.
Great. If you're from Maine. Very nice.
They don't.
If you're somehow visiting from Switzerland, there we go. The Maine of Western Europe. And if you're from New Hampshire, wonderful. That's most of the states in the Union right there. Thank you very much for being out here, gang.
I've noticed this thing in talking to a bunch of folks here and watching a bunch of clips before we came up here, that New Hampshire says New Hampshire like Australians say good day.
Hampshire?
No, they go New Hampshire. Like it's N apostrophe Hampshire.
Skipping of syllables.
Oh, I got one. Massachusetts folks, are you all familiar with a chain called Legal Seafood? As opposed to what? That would be like me having a restaurant called Heaton's Desegregated Diner. Of course. Why are you bragging about that in the title? I'm baffled by this. New England's fascinating to me.
I just love watching your reactions to all this stuff that I just consider natural.
Jen, you're here.
I am. Yes.
Can we get a round of applause for Jen?
Yeah. Yeah, very happy to be here.
This was a real struggle to do a show without you last week in Iowa, and now it is on and popping here in New Hampshire. But you're from, I don't know, but how, you have 11 hometowns. You're like, you have a Mitt Romney level of hometowns. how are you tied to Massachusetts?
Okay. So both of my parents were raised in Chelsea and they grew up a street away from each other on the top of the hill where the soldiers' home used to be. So they grew up here and then they moved to California. But like, I'm a Pats fan, a Sox fan. I'm a Laker fan, but the Celtics are my number two. I know. I can't lie to you, though.
The true bi-coastal elitist.
I know. I am the worst. But yeah, so every drop of blood in my veins comes from New England. And I did live in East Boston, Medford, and Arlington over the course of 3 years.
All right, be honest while all their eyes are trained on you. What was your opinion of New Hampshire growing up?
Cow Hampshire. The truth.
So it's like farmy kind of, it's not the
like
city.
Rural.
It's rural.
Yeah. Well, like my favorite cousin lived in the middle of nowhere in New Hampshire and I absolutely loved coming up here. But when I was a kid, like I went to a house in the middle of basically like forest and there wasn't much there and we got to hang out and it was beautiful and it was nature. And so like when I thought of New Hampshire, I thought of that. And then I also thought of cigarettes that you can get without paying taxes because my grandfather would drive up here from Chelsea to get his butts. But yeah, that was New Hampshire to me until I moved here and then like did stuff on my own. But yeah, that's what it was for me.
All of my relatives that aren't in prison are in Oklahoma.
Share Brewing in Manchester, New Hampshire. I'm Justin Robert Young.
I'm Andrew Heaton.
And I'm Jen Briney.
And we're not wrong. On this edition of the program, we will go over our experience here at the New Hampshire primary and specifically Jen Briney's first blush with the juggernaut known as Dean Phillips, the challenger to Joe Biden.
Tidal wave Dean.
Yeah. Challenger to Joe Biden in a primary that is happening but doesn't count, but also kind of counts. We will continue to explore and explain. Heaton, before we get to Jen, how would you compare Iowa, where we were last week, and New Hampshire? This is the bedrock of our American electoral system rests in the hands of these two states.
I had a thing here called a calzone. Which, if you're unfamiliar with this, if you come from, if you're from a part of the country that only has just pizza, calzones are armored pizza. It's a pizza it's like a double-decker pizza with extra cheese. So I have to say, so far, very impressed with the carb to temperature ratio of both states.
Yeah.
It's very favorable in my opinion. If you
had
like.
You for real never seen a calzone before?
Yeah, I thought we were just doing a bit when we were explaining this to you.
Okay, I thought that the calzone was like an inverted pizza. Where like you like flip it and it's all crust on the outside. The thing that I had cheese on top of it. It was very impressive.
That was a fancy calzone.
Okay, honestly,
yeah. A calzone is basically a big boy hot pocket.
Okay, I'm here for this. Okay, my honest assessment is I'm sure there are lots and lots of differences between Iowa and New Hampshire. So far, both states are very friendly, very rural, but one of them thinks that they all hang out by themselves all the time. So I do not see a huge degree of difference, but I've only been here for, 8 hours? Somebody will take me to go shooting or marry their sister or something. And then I'll get really, really into the local stuff more.
It's not that kind of rural.
in the difference between some of the events, because you saw Dean Phillips today and then you saw Vivek Ramaswamy in Iowa.
That did feel very different.
Okay.
Vivek Ramaswamy, probably a quarter of the people there were journalists, I'd say.
Yes.
It was also, I mean, granted, it was in the morning, so it was a little bit more listless, but it was also just much less densely packed. Whereas the Phillips, but I pointed this out to Jen because I came in and I was like, oh, they're doing a great job. They cut the room in half to force standing room.
This He's is thinking this is genius.
This is not genius. This is page two shit. When you're running for office, what you want to do is make everybody think, wow, the people have, this is really a shot in the dark. No one saw this coming. There's standing room only. So you intentionally want to move everybody into a small room, which they did.
Yeah.
And it had that much more elbow to waste energy. I don't know that the Vake campaign was thinking that hard about it or that they had quite the same turnout level. I don't know. It struck me as they had a much more, like, Vivek definitely has a niche that he's appealing to.
Yes.
Dean might be...
As opposed to the Beatlemania that is Dean Phillips.
Yeah, but they were appealing to very different subsets within their respective parties.
That is true.
Yeah, the Vivek crowd was a kind of intersection between techno-libertarian and Trumper. That was kind of the vibe I got. Whereas the Dean Phillips crowd is much more of a, what were some of the things he mentioned? Braver Angels, Stronger Together. He had his was much more of a bipartisan, quit hating each other kind of
democracy,
vibe.
Democracy, 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 democracy. In America, we believe in democracy. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of democracy going on in that talk.
All right.
Yeah.
Jen.
Yeah.
Jen has been to two political events in her life. One was in a parking lot of an industrial warehouse district of Las Vegas. It was so depressing to her. She drank so much, she stopped drinking.
It's literally the last day I drank. This is not a joke.
What was your response? And now I will say to set the scene for people, this was far more of a traditional campaign event. There was,
which you guys labeled as a successful one, like one of the better ones, right?
It is more typical, and I would say in terms of how it went, it was what you would, I don't know what much more Dean Phillips would expect.
I'm going to give the spectrum for people, the continuum of where political campaigns fall. Bad political campaigns feel like a wake. They like, it feels very like funereal. And then you up it a little bit and it feels kind of like an intervention, and they can be kind of fun, but like not that much fun. And then you get beyond that and it's uplifting, which is where we were. We were past the bad spot into the high spot.
Were we?
You get beyond uplifting and you get into religious euphoria, which weirds me out. I don't want that at a political
event.
That's
the Trump rally.
This was about how much enthusiasm I wanted. I want chuckle level enthusiasm from a political event. Nothing more.
Jen.
That's bleak.
What was your unvarnished reaction?
So I actually had very much the same vibe that I had in that big rig parking lot. Like my problem with the original one was, here are these people, the biggest super fans for the dude whose name I never learned and can't remember. But there was like 20 people that came out that were cheering so hard for him, and they went to this depressing parking lot, and with all of the money in this campaign, which they obviously had a lot.
This was Laxalt's.
Yeah.
Laxalt's event in Nevada.
Yeah. Clap if you know who that guy is.
Yeah.
Okay. We got one.
Those are the two journalists from Switzerland.
I want the audience to know that he's polling really well with the Swiss. My bad.
Oh, sorry. She's French.
Okay, yeah, my bad.
I didn't know that that Europe was so wired for Nevada Republican politics, but apparently it is. Yeah. You love to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, so like we went to that rally. Obviously, a lot of people didn't know him. And so these people go out there. It's at night. We were there in rush hour. And we got there and there was no place to go to the bathroom. There was no water or coffee. There was no snacks. And then when they got up there and each person had like 5 minutes, because he brought a sitting senator, John Barrasso, was there, and there were like probably eight of them. And they all went up there and yelled into a microphone for a while and then got in their gigantic bus with the guy's face painted on it, which is how I knew they had money, and then just left without speaking to these 20 people. Like, these are your biggest fans. These are the people that are going to go back to their neighborhood and feel awkward with their neighbors and say, vote for this person, and you can't even say hi. So I just saw it as like, you don't appreciate these people. Like, they're props for you in this event, you know? And I had the same vibe today with Dean Phillips, because what you considered great politics, I considered fucking rude, because they could make that room twice as big. They could have allowed us to sit down because we did stand for 2 hours. There is also a COVID surge going on. That's the reason that I wasn't in Iowa, because my husband got very sick with COVID. And so I stayed home. Luckily, I didn't get it. Hence, I was able to come here. But it is on my mind. And there were elderly people in there. And they smashed us all in when that was not necessary. There were empty tables. There were empty chairs. They could have opened that wall that didn't have to be there. Again, there was no refreshments. Like, I was thirsty. I would have appreciated some water. It was 2 hours. There was nothing for us. And it was just like, I felt that lack of appreciation again. I feel like we are props in this system. And I didn't like the vibe of it.
Because you were not taken care of.
I didn't feel like the people that were there, they were there so that Dean could get the shot. You know, like we were.
Absolutely it. And yeah. Give the room a vibe.
Well, I mean. Look,
we were there so that they could have a full room, which was artificially full for their camera shot. And I just didn't appreciate that.
I mean, apologies to any of the Dean machine that's here. But he is not exactly lighting the world on fire. He's running a doomed campaign. He may or may not be murdered by the DNC by the time that this week is over. There was a lot of people in New Hampshire that were coming out and giving him a chance, seeing what he had to see, because sure. New Hampshire has a reputation for doing that. People are like, oh, it's Saturday. What do I want to do? I don't know. Marianne Williamson? Like there's just that's like a part of the vibe here.
The fact that there were that many people that went to check him out, like that was the most inspirational thing to me. And this isn't specific to Dean, because like Andrew said, right when he walked in,
every single one of them.
Yeah. You saw the wall and you're like, oh, that's smart. They're cutting the capacity mm-hmm. of the room. And I was like, is that smart or is that rude?
And this is where I come in. I think that this is completely standard. That politicians, like you say, are going to use people to some extent as props. This is very, very standard. And my thought is, maybe if we give them more money and power, they'll fix everything. These people using us as props, what if we give them more control? So my immediate thing is like, I kind of like, years ago, I was traveling through Eastern Europe and I was in Romania and I kept meeting Roma kids. Roma kids would come up and they were very cute and I genuinely liked them and they genuinely liked me and they kept trying to rob me. So they'd go, can I hug you? And I'd go, yes, like this. And I'd bend over and I'd hug them holding my wallet up above me. That's how I feel about politicians, is I like them, but I want to keep my wallet above me.
Jen, aside from the element of props, what about Mr. Phillips's, Congressman Phillips's message? Did any of it resonate with you?
Well, I mean, he was saying that I actually liked the substance of everything he was saying, especially when he was talking about healthcare. You know, he was talking about we can do better, and he talked about the insurance industry. And I felt like everything that he said, I mean, he's certainly better than most of the options that I'm aware of. Like, so I would probably, in a fair system, like I would like to see that guy go further. Like, I like that he's a part of the Problem Solvers Caucus, which is a group in Congress that is trying to work together to actually solve things. They just don't have any power because this Congress
is insane. Didn't they disband?
I think they were thinking of doing it, but I actually think they are still a thing.
They're still together. Because I know yeah. after the speaker,
I'm not 100%
after
sure,
Kevin McCarthy got ejected, I know that there was a big internal fight where they were like, we're not solving any problems. Get out of here.
This Congress is so chaotic. It's got to be so frustrating. And I also appreciated that he said that, because it's got to be really hard to be someone who's in there, who's kind of a policy wonk, who wants to solve problems. And then you're just dealing. He even called them a bunch of kindergartners. And that's how I feel about it, too. I've been doing Congressional Dish for 11 years and I've never seen a Congress this bad. They're as childish as it gets. So to see his frustration, to see him, he was making fun of himself because he was like, well, none of you even knew my name 90 days ago. And I've done my show for 11 years and I'd never heard his name. So the fact that he was aware of that, but to put his hat in the ring, knowing that he's going to piss off the party, but to say like, I just want to give us an option that I consider better. I appreciate what he's doing. Like all of my beef about that rally was more of a systemic problem. It had nothing to do with him. I actually like the guy and I'm glad that he's trying to give us an option because he's absolutely right. Biden is not running. He's just being anointed in the
Well, this is not a primary.
No shit.
For the Democrats right now. That's happening because the Democratic Party of New Hampshire, when the national party said, oh, it's not going to be the first in the nation, the state party said, well, I'd like to not get murdered by my neighbors, so we're going to keep it as the first in the nation. And the national party said, ah, it doesn't matter anyway. Run it, and we just won't award any delegates for it. So that was all fine and good until Dean Phillips started running, and then all of a sudden Biden's like, well, I can't lose to Dean fucking Phillips.
I also don't think it's all fine and good.
So now it's right in Biden, which I've seen signs. I drove from here to Keene, from Keene to Nashua, which is where we saw Dean Phillips, and then back here. A lot of right in Biden signs. Can I ask here, our own little mini primary here in New Hampshire, how many people are voting in the Democratic primary on Tuesday? Raise your hand. One.
Okay.
One person. So I'm go ahead and expecting this is a low turnout.
What was that line that Phillips had that was so good about the write-ins?
Oh, he said,
if Biden wrote you off, why should you write him in?
Great line, right?
Love that line.
He had another zinger.
But then he went to the
I feel like he's taken the Granite State for granted.
To that the well, was our reaction.
To the well once too often. To the well once too often. Leave on a laugh. He had a great one-liner.
Yeah.
So that's what's going to happen. And to be totally honest, like right now the polls have Biden write-in at like 60%, Dean Phillips at like 15 to 20%. But I think that's also really hard to poll. Because if you call somebody and say, are you going to write in Joe Biden? I don't know. It's easier to say yes than it is to go and actually do it and remember to. And
well, and also like I'm not in either of these parties. We all know that I lean a little towards the blue side. But if I was in New Hampshire, I'd be voting in the Republicans so that my vote matters. So even though for like voting for president, I would probably not be voting for any of these people, but I would want my say to count. So I also think there's plenty of people that probably have more passion on that side that are also making the same calculation as me. Is that correct? Like, are there people that feel that way that are kind of.
I believe the number, because New Hampshire has such a strong tradition of people being independent, either having their classification as independent or switching parties. I think there was like 30,000 people that were registered Democrats that re-registered as Republicans for this election because they knew that they would have more agency here.
I would do it.
I appreciate tactical voting, and I really appreciate it when people switch political parties because I don't think parties should operate like religions. So if you're switching it in order to try and further your vote, I think it's a very healthy thing to do.
Here it comes.
I think with I'm not going to say
ranks, choice,
other electoral just No. I'm focused right now. I'm focused right now. What I was going to say is I think that while you could make a very good argument that right now maybe Nikki Haley can theoretically beat Donald Trump, you could also make an argument that if Dean Phillips got a huge turnout, that the Democratic Party would go, oh, shit, do people not like our guy as much as we do? And they might actually think about doing so. It's probably too late now. But at the same time, the history is LBJ performed poorly in the primaries and he went, I don't have enough support, so I'm going to drop out. So you could see some interesting things happen if Dean Phillips does really, really well tomorrow.
It's worth a shot. And I appreciate him taking it.
But in Biden's defense, LBJ was unpopular within his own party with an unpopular war. And Biden is unpopular with three unpopular wars. So
I liked Dean Phillips. I think he's a very nice guy. His campaign speech, I would say, was about 90% about temperament and personal story, I'd say. And I liked his temperament very much. If we were electing a guy for temperament, I would feel very comfortable with Dean Phillips. He seems like a very decent human being. The policy bit, he didn't get into as much. I suspect that I would agree with him in principle, but disagree with him in application on quite a lot of it. But he seemed like a nice guy. It was a very like Mr. Smith goes to Washington kind of thing. And
very aw shucks.
Yeah, very aw shucks. Yeah, very, very guy like Do you think this man's worked in an ice cream shop? I do indeed. I think he's probably done that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very, I was called to do it and I thought it was really screwed up that there was not going to be a primary. And if not now, if not me, who, if not now, when, I think he actually said out loud. In general though, I thought he was fine. I didn't really have a whole lot of expectations, but he told a good story. He explained why he was doing it effectively. And I think he won the room. The room was pretty into it. And he had a lot of...
They were into it. But then when he had us sing him happy birthday, he wished happy birthday to himself twice, which I found kind of funny.
Well, no.
Yeah, his daughter wished him happy. Let the record show. His daughter wished him happy birthday.
Well, so, yeah, it was his birthday today. He mentioned it was his birthday. Somebody started singing happy birthday. And here's one thing that is unequivocally true about Dean Phillips. Love him or hate him, he's pretty green. Like, he has not done that stump speech a lot. I think he seemed nervous because there was more than five people in front of him. I think he has done that one for under 10 people a lot. Not a lot for... there was what? How many people in that room? Probably
300.
More than capacity.
Yeah. Mm. So I think he was a little stuttery on it, but...
It was an unenthusiastic birthday song.
The first one was, I think he caught himself up in the air because somebody started singing it and he thought the rest of the crowd was going to join in and then they just didn't. But then during the Q&A, the first question goes to his daughter and his daughter starts with like, hi, dad. Aww. Yeah. And then she brought out a little cake, lit the candles. Everybody sang happy birthday. That was adorable.
He is at the moment, he is polling 80% with a greater Phillips household.
Yeah.
So there's a very good chance he's going to carry that family.
That's true.
But that wasn't the only birthday candidate that I saw today. You guys only saw Dean Phillips. I was up bright and early driving to Keene so I could see Governor Ambassador Nikki Haley this morning. How many of you in this room are going to vote in the Republican primary on Tuesday? I would say we have, apparently they've all sequestered in the back room here. We have a back room exclusively for Republican voters.
And don't worry, I was keeping an eye on the French lady. She didn't raise her hand. I just wanted to make sure, but she's cool. She's cool.
I know.
I was very curious to see Nikki Haley because I have seen this is now my third trip to New Hampshire for the primary. The most exciting people to see talk are the ones that think they can pull the upset. New Hampshire has a rich tradition of that going back decades. Most recently in the Republican, on the Republican side, you have John McCain in 2000, you have Donald Trump in 2016 that were out of nowhere candidates. And usually when you see them talk, it's exciting because New Hampshire does get into this stuff and people will be hooting and hollering and stomping and yelling. Fun time. Not fun for Nikki Haley. I have no idea what I was expecting, but this was not that. Instead of Dean Phillips' daughter saying, hi, dad, and bringing out a tiny
Which
little cake
would have been
and
amazing
singing happy
if she
birthday.
Did that. That would make me really respect that kid.
Well, it was Nikki Haley's birthday, too.
Yes, it was Nikki Haley's birthday as well.
Yeah.
And she was just given out of a plastic bag a small thing of maple syrup from the mayor of Keene. Like she was a visiting dignitary or something.
It's cute.
It was not. It was very odd. And the fact that he couldn't take it out of the plastic bag before he came up on stage was weird. And then he's like, this comes with a price. And she's like, ah. He's like, whenever you hear about maple syrup, you have to say the only maple syrup is from New Hampshire. She's like, okay, off to the races. And
good product placement there, mayor of Keene, New Hampshire.
Yeah, I don't know. There just was none of the excitement. The room was about 75% packed room, the Keene Country Club. And I was expecting there to be a little bit of electricity and more specifically, a little bit of the like, we're going to shock the world. New Hampshire has shocked the world before and we're going to be the next one to do it. How many of you voted for McCain in 2000? How many of you voted for Trump in 2016? You guys knew it then. You know it now. That's why we're going to win and we're going to totally shake up this race. Nothing. It ended with her saying, well, if we get Trump versus Biden in November, you can't complain if you don't vote.
Yikes. That's bleak.
Animated.
That was an ideal Nikki Haley voter for anybody who picked that up on the mic. One dude clapping.
Golf
where clapping where were you when Jeb needed you?
You know, that being
Jeb
said, though,
died for what in this state?
This is my second time to come to New Hampshire. And last time I was here, I went to, with Justin, I went to the infamous dog-faced pony line from Biden when he had that line, if you recall that. So we went to a Biden event. I would describe the density and capacity as medium. Jen, it was
yes. Like
there was adequate seating involved. And I misread the entire election. I did a whole episode that was entitled Biden's Done. And the reason I did that was because keying off of the room, I would describe the attitude of the room that I was in as, why did no one want this sweater? That was the interpretation of Biden at the time. It was the people kind of struck me as kind of disheartened, and they weren't sure why it wasn't working. They thought he was a really good candidate, but it didn't have that electricity.
Biden also fled the state. He was only here for 2 days, and then he's like, this shit sucks, and went to South Carolina.
And he took South Carolina.
Yeah, and it turns out, you know, it paid off for him. But there was good and ample reason to believe that he was toast here in New Hampshire when he was basically going to take two primaries off, get his ass kicked twice. Although the one after that was the Nevada caucus, where he claimed victory for getting beaten by 25 points. But at least he wasn't third this time, so he was making up some of the rank. And then, you know, South Carolina changes everything. But yeah, in that moment, that was the other weird thing when we saw that one, because the lying dog face pony soldier line, which played a lot better when you could actually hear him because he mumbles. I don't know.
Can you like repeat the, because I don't remember. I remember him saying it, but I don't know what it means.
Somebody came up and asked a question. I don't remember what it was. And he, in a clearly jocular manner, went, you're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Okay.
You all know that standard aphorism. You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier from that one John Wayne film you never saw. It was something like that. Okay. Like it was one of those moments where he was having the, like, everybody will know this reference from this Shirley Temple film that I went to when I was a kid because I was born in 1897. And yeah, so it was one of those things. Yeah. And then it was, I feel like kind of taken out of context by the rest of the media.
Well, I mean, look, he said it. It was weird. It was both weird, and he did indeed say it.
Yeah, but they made it sound like he was getting mad at somebody. He wasn't getting mad at somebody. He was just being avuncular.
He was just being Grandpa Simpson.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
is, yeah, you know, true to form, you know, as it turned out over the intervening 4 years. But the thing that I remember from that, and this got no press at all because it was just regular Biden fodder, was he was talking about passing the Domestic Violence Act, and he just went on uncomfortably long about acts of domestic violence, and he just was like, man, goes his wife, punches her, throws her down the stairs. Punches her again. Kicks her. Punches her. And we're all just like, what the fuck is going on? And then he's like, that's why I passed the law. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in a divided crowd that day. Divided crowd.
Yeah.
Of domestic abuse. Wasn't as strong lead as he thought it would be.
But yeah, so there we go. Jen, so you don't feel any better about democracy now that you have been here in the first in the nation primary?
No, because talking to you,
there
about
is a lot
it,
more food in Iowa. I think you would have liked, I mean, the fact that there was a lot more food.
I
there
do sound like a fat kid's like, where's my donuts? You know, like I know that.
And also, by the way, you know that traditionally the press doesn't get seats.
It wasn't about me not getting a seat. I don't really care. I can stand. I'm not that old. But it was the fact that, like, they had the extra room there. Like, there was that woman behind us who was walking around with a limp and couldn't find a chair. And she did get there late. But there was a whole other room. There was plenty of room to have more people sit. It was just like there was no concern for our comfort. There was concern for their media shot. That pissed me off. And I just feel like the whole system, the more I see how, because, like, I focus so exclusively on government. Like, I look at what they do. I read the bills, the laws. I watch the hearings. I watch government in action. So to see how this system is picking these people, I know it's important, but the more I learn about the details, the more I see that it's like, this just isn't it, like the fact that this primary is probably over after only Iowa and New Hampshire voters actually getting to vote. Like, I would be curious to see what condition we would be in if the whole country got to vote. But it's going to be over on Wednesday. I just, if you were an alien and beamed in here and you say, this is a government where the people pick the leaders, and then that alien finds out that the vast majority of voters didn't get to vote and it was already Trump and Biden, it would be like, well, that doesn't sound like a system where everyone gets to vote. And so I'm just, I, the more I see it, the more depressing I find it, the more I find that we're props, we're not.
I'm very much with Jen on the ballot restrictions that occur across the country. We've talked about this many times in terms of the amount of hurdles that are put up by the system in order to maintain power within the duopoly, et cetera, and so forth. I think where I would vary somewhat is I do not think that the using people as props is a side effect of the system. I think that's intrinsic to Democratic candidates themselves, not the party, but just running for democracy. I think that the nature of winning elections is that people are going to try to win the election. And so my takeaway from that
is... wouldn't you do that by reaching out to someone and saying, I value you, I want you to vote me, this is a two-way thing, I'm here to represent you, like I am, your comfort is important to me. Like you being a person right now is important to me, and like forcing people to arbitrarily stand doesn't send that message.
I think it is safe to say that Dean Phillips did not expect that amount of people, because he has been campaigning here for, what, 90 days, 3 months? And he probably hasn't seen a crowd of over 10 the entire time that he's done it.
This isn't about Dean Phillips. That was the one I went to, but I have been told that this is standard and this is considered wise political maneuvering. And there's a lot of things that are considered wise political maneuvering that I find insulting as a voter. And this was just an example of it.
Again, I think this is where we differ. I think that this is intrinsic to people running for office. I don't think that it's a side effect of the system.
It doesn't have to be.
No, it does. Everybody can run selflessly out of a sense of public duty and not out of a sense of narcissism. I very much want to live
or effectively trying to get elected, because you need to maximize your television exposure so more people can see who you are and hear your message and donate to you so you continue to go on and spread your message and possibly win. That's how you do it. That's how you stack momentum and get elected.
My point is, I think that for folks that run for office, and I don't think they're evil, I think they're mostly good and mostly want to do the right thing, but there's a high degree of self-importance, narcissism, and a really high level type A personality that tends to draw people to want to run for office. And so while I very much agree it would be great if everybody running for office was entirely selfless, I think that the natural state of politicians is a slightly self-serving element. And for that reason, my general inclination is to not give them a lot of power. So I look at that and go, this affirms my worldview. Good.
I just don't think it has to be this way. And if we keep accepting it, we're going to keep being props in their system where the vast majority of us don't get to vote and they don't value us. And like, okay, let's just accept it as what needs to be done to win our votes. Like, I don't accept it. I just don't.
How would you go about changing this? I would say Dean Phillips, based on what I've seen, is probably on the pretty like huggy end of this in terms of liking an audience. I think he was probably about as nice to a group as you get. He strikes me as a really good guy. Would you, like, if you were in New Hampshire, would you not vote for him out of that?
I don't know. It's not about Dean Phillips.
Sure. Okay.
No, like, but based on how he's polling, if we all tweeted him right now, he might come here and apologize. Like. That's not off the table.
I feel bad picking on him, but I've now been to two events and I had the same vibe at both of them where I didn't feel like the people were valued. So when I look at what I saw today, what would I do? Well, that was a removable wall. So once he did get the big crowd, I would have moved the wall and invited people to sit, especially the ones in the back of the thing. We didn't have to stand in there like sardines. That was a choice. They had a whole cafeteria section where they could have, instead of sending money on all those t-shirts that no one's wanted and all of those mailers who is sick of the mailers in New Hampshire? Let's hear a round of applause if you're excited for those to be gone on Wednesday. They are spending.
Hold on. Do you have your stack?
I do, but let me make my point first. They are spending so much money on that shit that you all hate that they could have opened up the cafeteria section, gone to Dunk's, put some donuts out, some shitty coffee, and it would have at least made us feel valued. Like, they didn't do those things. And I know it's just a gesture, but it's like where they're choosing to spend the money is not on the people that are taking their freezing ass Saturday which has playoff football games, and they're choosing to drive to Nashua to see this person, and whether it's Nikki Haley or anybody. If I am doing that, just show me that you appreciate me. Like, just get some Costco cookies. Like, I don't care. Just anything to be like, thank you for being here. And instead, that's what we got today. So how would I change what I saw today? Just show me that you care that we're people and we're uncomfortable in this situation. Like, physically uncomfortable.
But maybe, maybe they'll be really, really good with your tax dollars, though. Really good with those tax dollars.
All right. Give me those mailers. Give me those mailers. I want to count them out. We kept having... Jen tried to hand these to me, and I pushed them away because we needed to save them here.
These were
for
3 days worth of mailers that went to my cousin's house.
All right, 3 days coming up on the end of the New Hampshire primary. Heaton, for the listeners, how thick would you hazard that is?
That's about a quarter of an inch to half an inch thick.
All right, so we're counting them out. Haley. Haley, Trump, Haley, the New Hampshire, your voice is, oh, Haley.
Very
Haley.
Confused, Christy.
Yeah, oh, yeah, no, Haley. I thought it was Christy. Nope. Haley with Chris Sununu. Another Haley with Chris Sununu. Haley. Nikki Haley. Don't sit this one out. Who's this for? Oh, Donald Trump is a threat. Haley. Haley. Don't miss your chance to protect our democracy.
The big one. This democracy one he's looking at, for those who are listening at home, is like a giant Biden poster. I couldn't figure out who it was.
What the fuck?
this one doesn't have a name on it, so it might be Dean Phillips.
Yeah, no, it's... All right, so it's a gigantic picture of the Statue of Liberty, which, I mean...
Beloved New Hampshire landmark.
Exactly, right? It's up to you, New Hampshire. Undeclared voters can vote in the presidential primary on January 23rd. Choose to protect our democracy. Choose to make a difference. Vote in the New Hampshire primary on the 22nd. Don't miss your chance to protect our... Oh, so this is Haley.
But her name's not on it.
It's not on it. Hold on. There's a QR code.
There's a thing on the top that tells you the group that sent it out, and I didn't recognize it. You
paid for by Granite State Votes, a project of American Leadership Today. With an address in D.C.
Nice. Okay, what I'm saying, New Hampshire, is a very cold state gets free fuel for the fire whenever you need it. There you go. Heat your homes with politics. The rest of the country's paying for your firewood.
Okay, so, no, the QR code only brings you to the Secretary of State so you can decide.
So do you...
No, this is definitely Haley. This is Haley. Because what Haley needs on Tuesday is for... Like you, it's, this is not New Hampshire, and please correct me if I get any of this wrong. New Hampshire is not an open primary, so Democrats can't vote in the Republican primary, and Republicans can't vote for Democrats. But there is a rich tradition of people switching back and forth and doing it before the allotted time frame runs out. But there are undeclared voters that can vote in both. So pretty much anyone who listens to this show would probably just stay undeclared in New Hampshire because you'd want to maximize your electoral utility when it counts the most. But Nikki Haley needs those voters more than anybody else. If Dean Phillips was there, it would just be Dean Phillips. Remember me? I'm Dean Phillips. And if it was Biden, which the Biden people can't pretend like they're running, they have to just be like, just turns out a bunch of famous people showed up and said to write in Joe Biden. That's pretty much it.
Do we think that a project of American Leadership Today is like a super PAC? Like, who actually is paying for this? Because if it's it's going to the Secretary of State's website, which would say tax dollars, but my tax dollars better not spend money on this.
That's just to reassure people. They're like, scan this to make sure that you are registered to vote and your vote will count on Tuesday.
I think it's directing them to the website.
So you think this is paid for by a PAC?
Yes.
That is paid for by a PAC that supports Nikki Haley. I will guarantee you.
This is an old fun tool in politics as well, which is get out the vote, but get out the vote specifically with people you think are going to vote for you. So if I am doing get out the vote for a college camp, if I'm going to Sarah Jessica Lawrence College and doing a get out the vote campaign, I'm probably assuming they're going to vote Democrat. So in this instance, Nikki Haley almost certainly is trying to get people to get out the vote, and it's probably going to be people she anticipates voting for her or hopes that they'll vote for her.
All right, I'm looking at Granite State Votes.
We have to know.
No, all right. It just looks like
maybe there is just a really concerned citizen who wants people to get out and vote.
It might just be a get out the vote thing. That is possible. I don't think it's probable, but doesn't this just speak to
like dark money? That you get these giant posters in the mail and like Justin's a professional in this and like we can't tell you where the hell this thing comes from. Like, what is that money? Who's paying for this? Because like I was saying this before, but have you ever printed something in color? Because this is not even on normal paper. This is like hard paper. These things aren't cheap. So who is sending these to us? Like, what is... Yeah, he said Zelensky. There's so much money in this election and it could just go to better things. And it's just, this system is awful.
But I mean, like, look, I thought we were going to split out a bunch of them. I thought that maybe there would be an odd never back down or a DeSantis or maybe... A Christie flyer got lost and you know, eventually got there.
Well, even
but no, there was one Donald Trump, which is anti-Nikki Haley. It has Nikki Haley in gray skull, or not gray skull, gray scale. although I don't know. It's like Nimra. You know, he's calling her Nimra now.
What does that stand for?
It's her given name, I think.
No, it is not.
Is it not?
No, her given name is Nimarada, I believe.
Oh,
but
okay.
Nimra, I guess, is his
racist of
nickname.
Making fun of her.
What is it called when a nickname's racist? I don't know. Racist. That's it. Yeah, thank you. But yeah, Nikki High Tax Haley's agenda hurts seniors and working families the most. X broke her promise as governor not to raise taxes. X. Voted to increase the sales tax and supports a new 23% national sales tax. X wants to raise Social Security age and cut Social Security and Medicare. And then there is just a very put upon woman with her hand on her temple, just vexed by the concept of Nikki Haley.
It's just amazing to me how many of them there are, which speaks to her being the establishment's candidate because she has enough people willing to spend this much money on this crap that all of you hate.
Well,
that's a lot.
The problem is that so much money comes into these campaigns and all the money goes to consultants and the consultants need to spend it because you can't leave any money left. That's the only rule. Spend every penny. In fact, spend more than everything because most campaigns are actually in debt by the end of it.
Buy some damn donuts for the people coming to the rallies.
No, sorry.
I'm not asking for a lot.
Consultants don't also own donut shops. If they also own donut shops, like they own print shops, which is another reason why they spend their money giving themselves the contract to print all these things, then you would see a lot of donuts. You would see a lot of coffee if they ran coffee shops. But no, they also own this thing. And so they just pay themselves to print this stuff and then mail it to you.
Did you catch that Dean Phillips's family was somehow connected to Belvedere Vodka? Because that could have been a party today.
Yeah.
Could have.
That would have been a nice 2 o'clock.
Right, oh, my God.
Right outside of the black
ice. It would have made us warm. We could have drank ourselves some sweaters.
You want to know what? You know who you would have loved? Tom Steyer. Tom Steyer had full buffet. Oh. And it was a good buffet, too. And full open bar. And entertainment. I saw TLC perform at a Tom Steyer event. And then, of course, the famous one, Juvenile of Back That Ass Up fame, performing in South Carolina, where Tom Steyer's wife, who was wasted, allegedly, getting up on stage, very awkwardly dancing. And then Tom Steyer has to get up because otherwise his wife is just up on stage with Juvenile twerking. And so Tom Steyer just gets up and he's awkwardly moving. You can look this up. It is on the internet. It was one of the most surreal, amazing things I've ever seen. And in the episode that I put out, I'm just recording from the audience. And there's this quote that will live in my head rent-free forever, which is just a guy going, Tom doesn't know the words. And that pretty much summed up the Tom Steyer 2020 campaign.
That would
Tom doesn't know the words. But yeah, he took care of his, he took care of everybody that showed up. The only rule was
he's a billionaire, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only rule was you couldn't get drunk until he was done talking. So everybody would like he'd be like, telling you like, and that's why we need green energy now. And they'd be like slowly, like a baseball player leading off first. He'll be like slowly making their way to the bar. Like, and then as soon as he's like, thank you, Las Vegas, everybody lines up.
That sounds better.
On the note of just how awash we are in this campaign literature, I think that the larger a role we're going to have of democracy and government in day-to-day life, the more people are going to be interested in it, the more they're going to want to influence it, the more that they're going to want to put money towards campaigns and be active in it. So I see this less as a side effect of money in politics and just the fact that politics attracts money. And the bigger politics is, the more money it's going to attract.
Now I'm back to thinking this is a Nikki Haley one, because all of her other mailers also have the Secretary of State QR code on it.
Yeah. I can't imagine giving my hard-earned money to any of these candidates knowing that this is what they spend it on. Like, what's the point? And the television ads that we all mute. Like, it's so much money. We're now measuring our campaigns in the billions, and it's going to things that all of us hate. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, but I mean, like, but when the government is taking care of trillions, people are going to be very interested in where that goes. So it is going to get people to want to donate, want to participate, want to, like, it becomes more active for the entire citizenry at every level, be it financial, time, or attention.
Does it?
The more robust it becomes.
Because I've seen, like, so many journalists covering these pep rallies for politicians, and yet I don't know of a lot of journalists that are reading all the bills and laws that they pass and are talking about policy. Like, we do a lot of politics in this country, and very little, this is what they actually do. So I'm not seeing that.
Oh, no. To be clear, I'm not in any way, shape, or form saying that it's a more informed citizenry, or that the people that are actively participating in it are informed. What I mean is people care a lot more about who wins. People care way more about who wins.
Yeah, because it feels like sports.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't.
But sports that controls the economy, and sports that regulates day-to-day life. What I'm saying is the bigger democracy is, the more remit we give democracy over society, the more everybody wants to be involved in it, and the more important it becomes to everybody looking into it.
Okay, so this is where I think we're different, because you're defining what we're doing as democracy, and I'm saying that this is like democracy theater. Because at the end of the day, the vast majority of this country is not getting to vote in this primary. Like, that's just a fact, because like we're saying that it's over. Like, they will have the primaries, the ballots will exist. But like, in reality, Iowa and New Hampshire are choosing the Republican candidate, and the Democratic one has already been anointed. That's just like the reality of the situation. And seeing the amount of money that goes into this, and it's not, you know, to use us as anything other than props. It's for the mailers. It's certainly for the ads, which is why the media goes along with all of it, because they're the ones that are collecting these billions on the other side, because it goes from our pockets or rich people's pockets to politicians who spend it on ads. So it goes directly to the media. Like, this is
not directly.
That is what most of the money is spent on. It's spent
for
on
local
ads.
Television. So yes, ads. One element, the bustling world of local television does get a gigantic cash infusion in a few markets. But other than that,
which the local stations are owned by the giant stations. Like, my point is that like this system is making a lot of people rich. You talk about it all the time. These consultants that are getting rich, and
consultants are getting rich. Yes.
Yes. And there's a lot of people getting rich on this like circle jerk of cash that we call
take politics seriously.com. The PX3 Patreon, by the way, if anybody wants to.
But yeah, this
chip
doesn't
in.
Feel like democracy to me. This feels like they're pretending that we're doing democracy here, but in the reality of it, this is not it.
I mean,
so while you see this as like a way democracy works, I see it as our democracy not working.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm very much in agreement with you on duopoly, ballot access, all that stuff, right? But like we're still seeing this on like a state by state level for people running for governor. We're still seeing this in a state by state level for the Senate. Like, it's not like it's just Iowa and New Hampshire. It's everywhere.
Exactly. It's been accepted. It's normal that this election system somehow makes sense to people. And to me, I'm still like, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't think it's good for us. The fact that it has trickled down and is now how we do local campaigns too, I find even more depressing. I just don't like the way we're doing campaigns.
What is how we do local?
Sending shit mailers, and like, if this is how politics is done, I think there's a reason why half the country doesn't vote.
My kind of...
Because of the mailers?
The bit that I'm getting...
God damn it.
I'm thinking the more...
Am I making any sense? No? Okay. Well, it is different in New Hampshire. Like, I've never lived in a state where my vote has mattered the way it does here. Like, I don't get a lot of mailers until the general because my primary election vote has never mattered in any capacity. Whether I was in Massachusetts, Hawaii, California, Texas, it doesn't matter. And I'm frustrated with that. But you guys have something so different. Like, each one of you has the opportunity to actually meet the candidates at a pizza place. Like, that's not normal for the vast majority of the country. So you guys are people where your vote does matter. And I'm so jealous of that. And most of the country is in my position. And it's frustrating. So I like, great for you guys. I think it's, you know, I would cherish it the way you do. I would try to stay first in the nation because why wouldn't you? But for the rest of us, like, this system, I don't feel like I get to play a role in it.
I'm almost positive that in the states that you named, you were around for a Super Tuesday. And all those states that you named are Super Tuesday states. Super Tuesday mattered in Barack Obama's election. It mattered last election. It was gigantic. It was the pivotal moment in the Biden election. And California was a Super Tuesday state. We both lived in California at the time.
I don't feel like my vote mattered. I've never met a candidate. Never.
Well, you might have never met a candidate. That's true. But
there are certain, like, are you actually saying that you don't think that there are certain states that matter more than others and others are kind of on the sidelines?
No, there's two states and I was in one last week. I'm here. Yeah. Do you think I would on my own dime be flying up here and talking to everybody? No, you're all lovely.
Exactly.
But I mean, in the fucking New Hampshire in January, if it weren't for the fact that it's really important on the calendar.
Yeah. So don't tell me that my California vote matters as much as New Hampshire and Iowa.
I didn't say that. I said that Super Tuesday has mattered very recently. And it mattered in the last election. It was Super Tuesday that resuscitated Biden and sunk Bernie. And specifically in Massachusetts, Massachusetts was incredibly important because while all the moderate candidates dropped out, Elizabeth Warren didn't. And that split the progressive vote in Massachusetts, which gave Biden a huge victory. And delegate wise, it was victories like that. And in Texas that essentially powered Biden to the nomination last cycle. Those are like big, big, big votes. Now it's not Iowa. It's not New Hampshire. I have always been a steadfast defender of both of them going first, because especially if we care about keeping money in check in politics, which I think we can agree, outsized money is an annoyance to the electorate, and it tends to prop up other candidates that aren't necessarily the best, then Iowa and New Hampshire are kind of really, really important because you can just move here and hang out and talk to people for a long time, and it's not all that expensive. You can get up on the air, like we were watching the playoff game before we came here, and it doesn't cost that much to get on New Hampshire news. It doesn't cost that much to get on Des Moines news. It does. If you went national and you said, all right, gigantic swaths of the country are all going to vote at the same time, only the big money players would be able to do it. It would be impossible for small candidates to get ahead.
I mean, maybe it would be different if the calendar for all of this were different. Like if we had Iowa on a Monday, New Hampshire the next day, Tuesday, and like it went a lot quicker, like maybe the other states would matter more. But I just know that with the election that we're looking at now, the fact that it's so early in the process and we are already staring down the same election that we had in 2020 and frustrated most of us, like that can't be a sign of a healthy democracy. And yet that is where we're sitting.
I got an idea. I'm a uniter, not a divider. And I think I can bring Justin and Jen together while alienating the whole room, which is my goal. All right, Justin, it sounds to me like your side of the electoral order system is that in a state like Iowa or a state like New Hampshire, smaller candidates are able to get traction in a way they could not at the national stage. Therefore, you want to have it be piecemeal because that will enable a larger franchise to work within democracy.
Jen,
you are worried that two states get to play kingmaker and all of the other states end up being a rubber stamp. What if we kept an order of states, but we swapped the order periodically?
You've had that idea before, and like it's worth changing something.
The other thing I would do if I could pitch Heaton's fix money in politics thing to you, you can all come up with your additional things. But I got three things that I think would help a lot right off the bat. One, committee chairs are just elected by their own chair in by their own committee in Congress. Right now, you've seen the stats, right, about how like congressmen have to raise like $300,000 every single year, and senators have to raise $8 million every single year. It's an insane amount of money. They're not raising that for themselves. Most of the seats in the country are completely safe. They're completely safe in terms of switching parties. 91% to 93% of Republicans and Democrats will maintain that power structure. It has nothing to do with winning their own election. What they're doing is they're raising money because that's how they advance within the party in Congress. So just say from now on, committees elect their own chair. All of a sudden, all those congressmen and senators who spend all of their time making phone calls don't have to do that anymore. I would do that. Part one. Part two, if you're in Congress, you can put your money in an index fund and that's it. You can't pick stock while you're in Congress. That's bullshit and obviously bullshit, right? So you want, thank you. Thank you for, do that. And then the third one is if you've either legislated over a particular industry or you've regulated a particular industry, you can't work in it for 10 years. That seems like a no-brainer to me as well because they can get around it. So I would do those three things. And I think that would do a lot to remove the amount of money in politics and also make sure that it's not outright graft and corruption.
They're great ideas, but this system that we have for picking those people is it's rewarding the people that are best at the money-raising game. So we need to get people in Congress that will actually do those things. But we have this problem where the only people that can get into Congress are good at this system for getting in. So like that's where I have the disconnect and why I get so frustrated. Like I'm looking for a Congress that's going to use the incredible amount of good ideas that are presented to them. These hearings that I'm watching, especially the ones that aren't on C-SPAN, are so good. They call in experts, and because they know they're not on TV, a lot of times it's not a bunch of campaign speeches. Like it's really substantive. Like we have this problem. How do you suggest we fix it? They'll have five different people and they'll have some kind of consensus and like they'll argue about the details, but the solutions for everything are out there and Congress is being told about them. But these aren't people that are interested in implementing them for stupid fucking political reasons. And so like, I don't know how to get the Congress that I want that's incentivized. Ugh.
Someone said run. Someone said run from the crowd. Run, Jen, run.
Run, run Jen, run. Run, Jen, run.
I know.
Well, cut to 2.5 years from now. Guys, cut the room in half. We need standing room only. What are we, fucking Mickey Mouse? Get your shit together.
That is part of my frustration because I do feel like I have these crazy dreams where like I'm the one on the House floor when they're about to take a vote through an empty room and I'm at least there to say like I object, someone come back and vote for this, because we've had things that are controversial. You talked about members of Congress being able to trade stocks. We had, and this is when I realized that I had something with Congressional Dish. This happened back in 2013. They had passed something called the Stock Act, Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act. And it was supposed to give us a website where you could really easily look at their trades in real time and they couldn't password protect it. Like it wasn't stopping them from actually insider trading, but it was at least going to make it easier for irritating people like me to tell you about it. And they gutted that over the course of 2 days by passing it through an empty House of Representatives and an empty Senate. They literally brought it up there and said, there was no one in the room. And they had people say, we put this up for unanimous consent. They got the unanimous consent of an empty room. And there was a Republican that did it in the House, a Democrat that did it in the Senate, and then Obama signed it into law. That is how the Stock Act got it. And that website, no, it doesn't exist. It's never existed because that was one of the things that was taken out amongst other things in that bill that had anyone just stayed in the room, they couldn't have done it. So it's like there's ways that people that are not in the Democrat and Republican Party can go to Congress and make a difference without actually, you know, being one of them. And I do have dreams of like finding my way in there. But this system, like I'm not going to go and beg people for money. And yes, I know my funding method for Congressional Dish. I get the irony in this. I don't want to do this, you know, like this is not the way that I would want to run a campaign. And I also don't want to be like, well, I'm just going to collect $10 from everyone so I can send the mailer. Like, I don't know how to get in using this system that makes me actually nauseous. Like I go into these places and I hate what I see and I don't know how to. And I think there's a lot of people like me that would want to go there to help our communities and help the working class and do all these things. But I don't know how to be a part of this campaign system. And so that's the disconnect. Would I love to go to Congress? Yeah, for at least 2 years to at least tell you, this is what's happening. This is how it works behind closed doors. Even for my own education, if I could sneak in there for 2 years just to tell you what's going on from the inside, I think that would do a lot of good. I don't know how to get in. So I'm willing to put my name on the ballot. Like, that much I can do, especially in Texas. It only takes like 500 signatures or something. But the actual running in the system, like if I were to do it, I would want to try a completely different way. And I don't know. I don't know. That's why I get so depressed when I see this, because like, I don't know how I could possibly fit and do anything in this system that I despise.
Jen, you're right. Ms. Craven groveling for money is disgusting, which is why all of you need to go to patreon.com/we're not wrong to support this show on the Patreon episode, which you get exclusively as a supporter. We are going to hear from the people of New Hampshire. You guys are all going to be able to come up, ask whatever you want, and we will do that. That will be on the Patreon exclusive version of the show. But for our free version, Heaton, any final thoughts here on New Hampshire or anything?
Can I get like really wonky for a minute? How wonky is this room? Okay, good.
Fuck. All right.
Everybody calm the fuck down. We're going to get wonky for a minute. I think one of the reasons that a candidate like Jen would struggle in our current system is purely structural. And that is that in the United States, our constituencies are way too big. In the United States, a congressional district's about 700,000 people. That's fucking huge. It's fucking huge. The United Kingdom, their members of parliament have a constituency of, I think, about it's either 70,000 or 30, it's 30,000 to 70,000. The Bundestag has smaller constituencies. France has smaller constituencies. I don't know about Switzerland, but I'm very small constituency. If you originally when we came up with the House of Representatives, Madison wanted to cap it at 30,000 people per district. That was the original idea. It got scrapped. But if we'd done that, we'd have like five. I'll take a round of applause for that. Yeah, I got index funds and congressional districts should be capped at 30,000 people. Nice. But I'll bet you, as a result of that, you could probably actually meet your member of Congress if you felt like it. Right. See, and that's one of the things. If you're
okay, there's a lot of numbers. I don't think any of that get picked up for the podcast, but know, listeners, that people have a small
constituency. The audience was shouting that I was handsome and right unanimously for people at home. One of the problems is if we're gonna have districts that are 700,000 people, nearly a million people, the only way to reach the people in it is multimedia. It's mass media campaigns, right? So if we want to have people that actually directly represent the districts that they're in, we need smaller districts. And by the way, to get a little bit more wonky, this would also solve a lot of the problems that many people have with the Electoral College. Right now, the Electoral College is set up where if you're a rural state, you have more weight than another state. Jen is absolutely correct when she says that her vote in California is less than somebody in Wyoming. That's right, because in Wyoming, they get two votes that are senators for free, right?
You also get to live in California.
You increase the amount of members of Congress, you increase the amount of electoral votes, and it more equally distributes. And that's not something that would require a constitutional amendment. That's something Congress could do. So I don't know. Everybody here get elected congressmen and congresswomen from New Hampshire, all of you, and then push this through, please. Anyway, those are my closing thoughts. Thanks, Justin.
Jen, any final thoughts?
This is actually a little bit more personal, but I used to go to these podcasting conventions, but they were more for, you know, fans. And I always wanted to be in them. LA Podfest was my favorite one. And I learned about a bunch of my favorite podcasts by seeing them in person. And I always wanted to be a part of that. And so to come here to New Hampshire and see this many faces in this room that came to see us, it's literally a dream come true. So thank you all for coming.
She cried. Yeah. Yeah.
There's no tears.
We're Not Wrong is a production of Dog and Pony Show Audio. I want to thank a few people here. Not only our editor, Will Saddleberg, who is always here to make sure that the show sounds good and gets out on time, but also Kuhan, who put together the live show, as well as the Touchere Brewing Company. This place is phenomenal. How many people have enjoyed the beer here tonight? And of course, the owners, Jenny and Aaron, thank you guys for taking the time out. And I think we packed this place. Like, there were like four people that weren't with us, and we chased them right the fuck out of here. So we send them out into the cold, dark night. Until next time, New Hampshire, I'm Justin Robert Young. For Jen Briney and Andrew Heaton, we're not wrong!
Dog and Pony Show Audio.